apes together strong. Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Close Up. I'm your co-host, Joe.
And I'm Ryan. What a wonderful day!
Just two apes talking about Planet of the Apes, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Today, full spoilers ahead for that movie, and probably the Caesar trilogy as well. So that's Rise of the Planet of the Apes, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, War for the Planet of the Apes, and probably the original Planet of the Apes while we're at it. We're just spoiling most of them that we've seen anyway. So, on to our medium shot now. Anticipation level. How was it going in?
My hype for this movie kind of varied because I thought the trilogy was so perfect. The Andy Serkis ones was so good that I kind of didn't want them to continue. But then I saw the the first teaser wasn't great. So I was like, okay. But then the second trailer kind of intrigued me a bit more. And then seeing different clips and different, you know, how the CGI was looking. It was still looking as good as the trilogy. So my hype level going to this was pretty good. Can't lie.
I also was hesitant because the Caesar trilogy wrapped up pretty perfectly. There was really no reason to do a fourth one, except the money, of course. That's the main reason to do a fourth one, if anything, really. But I also had some hope because I didn't care anymore. And that's a powerful thing when you don't care anymore, because the Caesar trilogy ended on a high note. It was still good. And if they made a fourth one that was just as good, perfect. If the fourth one sucked, I don't care. I still got a great trilogy. So really, all this movie had to do was just be good, and I would be fine with it. And it was. And I look forward to more. Now just don't mess up the next ones. That's all I ask. Just keep this franchise consistent. It's one of the few.
Yeah.
I don't know why people don't talk about these Apes movies very often, because they are magnificent, really. They're technologically innovative, solid stories all around, well acted, good continuation of a legacy IP. They're just flying under the radar for some reason when they do so much right. And they're obviously making money, enough money that they keep making these things. But I never hear anyone talk about them. Just in my life, I rarely ever talk about Planet of the Apes with anybody.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like one of those secret trilogies that people love to talk about secretly. But it's just, yeah, it's just kind of one of those. It's weird because it's like it's a niche series of movies, but also not at the same time.
I feel like everyone I know has seen them, but nobody talks about them.
Yeah, it's like whenever each one comes out, it's just always phenomenal. So just everybody just agrees, like, yeah, they're phenomenal, and then just leave it at that.
It's weird, though. It doesn't have the same cult-like following of a... If a Marvel movie is god-awful, we're still talking about it 3 years later. Planet of the Apes is awesome, and I never hear anything about it till a new movie's coming out. It's weird.
Yeah, but it's very strange.
Well, here we are riding the miniature hype train. Well, it lasts. By the time this episode's out, it'll probably be past the station, but whatever. We still want to share our thoughts, because this is a good movie and deserves to be discussed. So discuss it we shall. I thought it had even for the potential doubters, it's hard not to get invested right from the opening scene of them lighting Caesar on a cremation pyre a la Qui-Gon Jinn, or they're just saying goodbye to him and all chanting his mantras, the apes together strong. And I did not expect to see any bit of Caesar. I thought they were just going to skip right forward into the new stuff. So to start with an epilogue to War for the Planet of the Apes. That was a powerful choice and a good way to get me hooked in. And yeah, you feel anything from that too?
Yeah, right away, like my critique goggles were on just going into this because I have such
impress me
love passion for the movie or for the trilogy. And then right away they show Caesar at the funeral pyre. I was like, immediately got me in the feels.
Yeah.
Just like kind of set the tone for the entire movie. And just, it was a kind of a nice, also just like passing of the torch. I was just like, okay, you had your series or you had your series of films and now we're moving on and we're going to this new, new era of the Planet of the Apes, which I thought was done quite respectfully and lovely.
One of the most impressive aspects of Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is that, far as I'm concerned, this could be somebody's first Planet of the Apes movie, and you won't be missing much. I think between the fact that they set it 200 years or something like that, a couple generations at least, after the last trilogy, it doesn't matter. You don't need to see the Caesar trilogy to understand this, because Noah is our audience stand-in. He's getting all the events of that past trilogy explained to him on his journey anyway. And the way this movie's set up, it's not set up as Planet of the Apes 4. It's set up as effectively a soft reboot with its own new status quo that's being shaken up. A new main character who's just starting his hero's journey. And all you really need to know is the setup. Apes rule the world. Humans are dumb. And that's it. You don't need any other knowledge of Planet of the Apes except the very basics, and this could be your first without the baggage. So I respect that the way it was written and presented is a good jumping off point for people.
Yeah, it's a great start to not only just a new trilogy, but just also it paying respect I keep saying original trilogy, but it's not even the original. It's like a franchise that started in the 60s, but like the circus trilogy. But then it's like it doesn't hold the audience accountable for having to watch those first three movies. This very much is like a standalone film. And there's like little hints of the original trilogy, of the circus trilogy in there. But it's not dependent on it. It just kind of tells you the mythos of Caesar and his belief system. And it's really just the basics of it. And just kind of adds to the legacy of Caesar as well. And if anything, for people who haven't seen the original trilogy, I would make them want to go back and watch the original trilogy.
Because everything that happens in this movie is hearsay. Caesar said this, probably. Did this, probably. And we're all going to take that for what we will. Some of us, well, really, that's what this whole movie is about, is Caesar's legacy and how he's seen as this religious messiah figure in the future. And it's about what people do with that. He is the guy who set up ape society as it is. And now the apes are kind of fractured in the tribes. You have the people like Noah's tribe, whose elders intentionally tried to forget their past. He's never heard of Caesar at all. These apes don't know their history. And you know what they say, those who don't know their history are doomed to repeat it. That's why when they get captured by Proximus, they're kind of like, okay, fine, I guess we can join your empire because we have no sense of history of our own. Like, we have our ways, but like, Eagle Tribe is done. We can be approximated into your tribe now. That's Eagle Tribe. And then you have Proximus's tribe, who follows the ways of Caesar, partially. I remember it being pretty striking, that one scene when he came up with apes together strong. He remembered that, but he conveniently forgot the part about apes shouldn't harm other apes. So this is a commentary on these messiah figures who did good things that objectively benefited all their kind. And then way further down the line, people are like, we're going to cherry pick what we liked about this and use the rest to benefit our current agenda for today. So it's not about, it's really not about what Caesar said. It's about what they can use to cherry pick it. And then you have guys like Rocca who remember more the full picture, but the full picture isn't really shown to matter because people like Eagle Tribe, they don't know Caesar existed. People like Proximus, they're just manipulating. And the one guy who knows what Caesar actually did, well, his tribe's all dead. He's the last one left. So who cares? What Caesar actually did can be forgotten for all the world cares. They all benefit from his actions, but like it's one of those, it's propaganda. The reality doesn't matter. It's all about the optics. If this guy says Caesar did it, then that's good enough for the people who still kind of care.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the commentary and the sort of the message about how like the message about the message and how it kind of gets lost in translation throughout generations.
It's a broken
and how
telephone.
It just felt, it just felt natural and how, you know, the main message is there, like apes together strong. But yeah, it's the ape will not kill ape is the next big one. And
conveniently forgotten.
It just goes to show how it's kind of, it's just kind of a, it's like a whole allegory of even just like in real life, even like the church of like, you know, just how a lot of people choose to follow one, like one set of rules instead of the whole thing. And how, especially with Proximus, how he chooses to have his followers believe in the apes together strong, but not the rest of it. And he's even goes as so forth as to enslave his own kind, kill his own kind to do so, just in order to get an upper hand on everybody else.
And dares to proclaim himself the new Caesar.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
Bastard.
That's not just, I'm not just following in the footsteps of a great man. I'm taking his name and wearing a crown and expecting you to deify me the same for what I'm doing here. So it's not just, he's trying to create a myth for himself on the back, on the standing on the shoulders of giants. And it, like the religious is more on the surface, but I think it also cuts down to, okay, maybe in our society, we're not as religious as we used to be. So what can we take away from this that's less religious based? Well, I think it's more a matter of just plain leadership. And do we believe blindly what our leaders tell us? Do they actually, like they're pretending they have, they're leading us on certain bases of facts, whether it's religious facts or just like we're trusting in their word for some reason. But like in Proximus' society, nobody really questions why he does what he does. They don't question, are these Caesar's exact teachings? Or is there actually anything in that vault? He's just a powerful guy and we follow him kind of blindly. And then you look at Eagle Tribe and Noah's like, okay, well, we're not really living up to our full potential here because the village elders forgot all our history. So like I was never taught to ask questions about where we come from or even that there are other ape tribes. We've been so isolated and like nobody's asking any critical thinking questions. They're all just blindly following their leaders and their traditions. And this is Noah stepping out of his comfort zone and being like, okay, maybe what I was taught was partially right, but there's a bigger world out there that I never was taught to consider. And I'm looking at this other tribe that's very brainwashed and set in their ways, and they're not critically thinking either. Like, why can't we just question our leaders, maybe? Is the main idea I take from this, whether it's based on religious ideology or just secular politics. It's just, Can we question our leaders? Don't follow anything blindly, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's great. It's just it's just a phenomenal kind of real look into our reality as well, of just like questioning beliefs and trying to peel back the curtain a little bit and trying to get out of like this safe bubble that people are in sometimes. And it just goes to show that like it's not even human nature, it's just nature in general. Mm-hmm. And I think they did it phenomenally in this movie. I really liked this movie. I don't know. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, I did have a point about something else, and now it's slipping my mind. So I'll move on to the next bit. I was thinking another big element in this movie is the... Oh, now I remember. I was going to say, I think one of my favorite joke in the movie was probably Rocca, the biggest devotee of Caesar, when he's trying to save May from Proximus's soldiers, and then he takes a club and whacks one of the apes off the horses, and Noah looks at him in horror, and he's just like, Caesar will forgive. And they ride off.
That's a good joke, yeah.
Yeah. Just this guy who's super into his religion. Apes should not harm other apes. He's very adamant about that. And then he's like, okay, but I can do it this one time. There are exceptions. So another big thing about this movie is the moral debate about how human survivors should be treated. Some of the apes see them as no better than animals, while some treat the humans like pets, basically. And others, like Rocca, see them as valued life forms that they can empathize with. And it's like, well, you're just a living being like the rest of us. And so it's about... It's nearly an animal rights story in a way. Like, how are we treating...
Yeah, like a reverse animal rights thing.
It's an interesting parallel to Rise of the Planet of the Apes, where it was effectively the same thing. They tested on Caesar's mother and had her, and she died in captivity, and they tried to put Caesar in captivity and mistreat the animals, put them in a zoo, lab tests, and... just general, we're better than you, even when you can talk. And even throughout the others, like, the humans keep fighting the apes, and now the apes are fully in charge, and and a few generations removed, they're kind of seeing humans the same way. Like, okay, well, they're just like curiosities, probably, for a zoo. Or, oh, maybe they're actually living beings who should have some rights in this society. And then you get ones like May, who are immune from the plague, I guess. They don't even know smart ones still exist.
Yeah. Yeah, when she talks, they're just absolutely flabbergasted.
Yeah. Which was a good reversal of... It's a good parallel, once again, to Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Like, the first time Caesar's like, no! That's a shocking scene. Which, for some reason, it didn't register for me the same way when May spoke for the first time. It wasn't until, like, a few sentences in, I'm like, oh, crap, she's talking. This is like a thing now. Okay.
Yeah. It was funny that May's, when she screams Noah for the first time to, like, save her, I kind of got the same feeling that I did from Rise, even though Rise is, I think, like, peak cinema, his first word being no. It's just because he's been... Yeah. I could do a whole video essay on Rise. But just her, it just reminded me of that. So that kind of impacted the scene too as well. It just goes to show her level of intelligence. I mean, she's screaming in a field full of apes, so maybe that's not the best form of intelligence, but it was her one, you know, trick play to get out of there. Yeah. But it just goes to show how much love this film has for the Circus trilogy. And how much it kind of tailor backs to that trilogy as well, but also having its own identity as well. Yes. In terms of the characters and still showing respect to that trilogy, but still moving forward with the whole story of where the world is at now. And I really appreciate that, especially with the characterization of May, because I thought she was going to be annoying. I just really thought, I don't know why, I thought they just casted Freya Allen just to be a second, like to just for her to play Ciri again. But no, it was completely defied my expectations how her whole character arc through this show changed and how she sort of became an antagonist at the end.
It's a very morally gray situation because you can understand where she's coming from and that, okay, my species is second rate on this planet now, but it was all ours. All the places you're living in are the ruins of our society. You're trying to steal our weapons and our history, and I don't want to collaborate with you on that. I'm not helping that. Just because the humans have lost doesn't mean I have to help you. She wants to do right by her kind. Where I start losing sympathy for her is when she strangles the old man, which was a great scene there, especially how long they held on that. That was pretty shocking.
Yeah, it was a pretty dark scene.
Yeah, but that's what kind of makes her an antagonist. Or at the end when she's going to negotiate with Noah and she has the gun hidden in her back pocket, she's ready to assassinate him. So the idea, obviously, they're trying to push is that humans are a very territorial species who can't stand coexistence. It's got to be, we got to be in charge entirely or nothing. And that's kind of a common theme for all the Planet of the Apes movies. Even when things are grim, they're still trying to fight for dominance. And the apes are like, okay, but we can coexist. Some of them are like, okay, crush the humans, whatever. But a lot of them are like, we can coexist, you know. And that's not really an argument we see much in the humans since James Franco in the first one.
Right.
They're just, we got to take over everything, which I don't know. It's not the most nuanced picture of human nature, but I think we are a very territorial species like that. I mean, we did used to share the earth with Neanderthals and whatnot. We weren't the only species on this planet at one time, and we did outlive them.
Right. I mean, I think it's believable too, because I think on some, it's like man versus man or man versus nature, where it's like the whole point of our existence, you could going down to brass tacks, is just to survive. It's just to be born, repopulate, and then die. That's basically what it is. Yes. And humans throughout history have just been trying to kill each other for world dominance for centuries. So to see that there are still humans in this world, in this movie world, still fighting for survival and still fighting for dominance is, in my opinion, very believable.
Yeah. And you see that the apes, or at least the ones under Proximus, they're starting to fall into that tribalism as well.
Yeah.
Once again, because they lost the tenet of apes should not kill other apes. Caesar learned that from seeing humans being stupid. He's like, okay, we shouldn't kill each other, but if we're starting a society fresh, let's make that a ground rule. Don't be assholes to each other. But I also think that Proximus is fascinating because he does see the value in humans too. He has that one guy, it's like, okay, well, you can live on the boat. You can live on the ship. You can have fresh water and clothes and all the books you want. You just make me the cattle prods because I don't know how to make weapons like that. Help me get into the vault. Great. I love having you around. I'll talk to you. I'll give you everything you need to survive. You're useful. Proximus is like, okay, if they can be useful, I'll use them. So,
yeah.
And he's like being a pragmatist about it. He's like, apes took over the world. We're done. Why are you still trying to fight this? I'm just surviving here. I got a good gig here. Why are we trying to blow all this up, right? I kind of empathize with the old man there. He's like, it's done. We lost. Stop. Just like,
yeah, except, for sure.
Except good enough here. Which, yeah. You know, obviously it's like, okay, well, being a human, you want the humans to still be doing okay, but he's doing okay. It's Freya Allen and May who's causing trouble, upsetting the balance.
Yeah, that's true. But he's also like, from May's eyes, he's still a prisoner. Like, he's not truly coexisting. He's not free. And I know what upset you when she killed him. But for me, I was kind of like, okay, this character has some balls.
For
like,
sure.
That was
for
one
sure.
of the points that made me, it was like, really like her character. Because, yeah, he probably rat on them as soon as he saw Proximus.
Yep.
It's like, hey, by the way, they're doing some weird shit over there. And it felt like a D&D moment where she just like was like, fuck it, I'm killing him now. I'm killing this NPC right now.
It's a very morally gray situation, which I appreciate. It's there. I don't think there is a clear right and wrong for any of these characters.
No.
Even Proximus is very much like, okay, sure. He's just a guy who values knowledge and he wants to get the knowledge in that vault. Yes, to get more powerful. Yes, he attacks settlements and kills dissenters, but he's also like, once Eagle Tribe agrees to be a part of his community, he treats them effectively like the rest of his community. He's just trying to build up his own empire with very sketchy means, but like, there's a lot of moral grays in this movie. I don't think anyone is truly black or white. Some of them are a little more on one side than the other, but they're all kind of except Noah. Noah and Raka are good, but like everybody else is sort of in a gray zone.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, totally agree. And I think it adds the level of complexity that these movies have. Oh, it's like, oh, only humans can feel this way. It's like, no, it's just nature. You know, sometimes things are just morally gray and, you know, people are gaining power through sketchy means, but they're also giving this, like having this community all together and apes together strong, right? It's all in the name for that, but it's under sketchy ways. So it's never black and white. And I'm happy to see it be shown like that in a film, even if it's a bunch of CGI apes running around, which look phenomenal, by the way.
Yeah, I think I focused more on the story this time than the effects, because the effects are good as ever, but I didn't see as huge a leap from War for the Planet of the Apes. The effects in this series have always been so good, I sort of just take them for granted now. I'm like, wow, that's great, but now it kind of lives or dies based on its story, because I'm just used to the effects being so good. It's not enough to sell it on its own anymore. Whereas for like Rise and Dawn, I'm like, yeah, even if the story did suck, which it didn't, but even if it did, the effects are worth the price of admission to see. Now, less. So, but yeah, the fact that they kept that consistency is still amazing to me. Because having it shift hands.
Yeah, the level of detail on just each of the character models and the fur physics,
the fur, the textures, the light reflecting off the fur.
Textures, all of it. Though, even like some of the, in the third act, the water scenes as it was, and I'm pretty sure it's still Weta Digital, so it's the same team that worked on Way of Water. And just how everything looks seamless. It's insane how, like, I didn't see any like clipping or anything that took me out of it. I was just like, I'm just watching two apes fight underwater, and I believe 100% of everything. None of the effects really took me out of it, except maybe like when Raka spoke a few times, or was like, that looks like a human face sometimes on an orangutan. But other than that, it's like near perfect.
The only times I was taken out were during some of the action scenes where, okay, you have a lot of other CGI going on around. So, like, there was times in those situations specifically where I'm like, I don't think this is motion capture anymore. It's just pure CGI, and it's a little more obvious based on the movements, based on everything that's going around here. This is just a completely computer-generated scene. Mind you, still looks really good. But when the rest of the movie looks so phenomenal, the downgrade was noticeable enough to me in those moments. And I also think that's because I didn't love the action in this movie, so I was getting a bit distracted looking for technical things. But I think the field scene was the best balance of tension and choreography and editing and all the things that make action good. The rest was just, okay, cool stuff happening, but I'm not super invested in it. Not bad by any means, but it's just didn't do a lot for me personally.
I mean, I'll take any action scene out of this movie than any other live action movie that just adds shaky cam to each fight.
Yep, definitely. So, camera that. Movements. Or-
the field scene was great. And I think I particularly like the end of the first act when the Eagle Village was burning. I think that fight in the tower was pretty good. How the gorilla was just beating the shit out of his dad. It was insanely violent, but yeah. I agree, though, like the kind of the end climax fight between Proximus and Noah was a little bit of kind of underwhelming. At the same time, but it was nice seeing all of them kind of come together.
The very end was cool, yeah. Though, when he calls the Eagles down to kill Proximus.
Yeah, it's like one of those things, like what we were talking about, the Challengers movie, when he raises the racket. It's like, well, he talked about the Eagles song earlier in the movie. Are they not going to do it? And then he does it.
They better do it.
It's like, yeah.
That one I also think was following Caesar's tenets in a kind of bullshit way. Ape shouldn't harm other ape. I didn't touch him. It was the Eagles. Eagles killed him, not me.
Well, yeah. It kind of goes back to that Dawn thing, or Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, where spoilers for the trilogy, when it's the Koba versus Caesar fight, and Koba's hanging on the ledge, and Caesar's about to pull him up, and Koba says, "Ape, not kill ape." He's using his own words against him. And Caesar saying, "You're not ape. You are not ape." So in his eyes, he's not following the rule. Koba's not following the rules of the ape society at all. So why should he consider him to be, you know, good enough to be a part of the society? Or you could just simply say, well, he's evil, so we kind of give him a pass. Which, you know, I kind of get. Yeah. And it's kind of the same thing here with Proximus, where he's using the words of Caesar for his own gain, for his own personal gain and for power, but he's not using it to actually bring a community together. He's just using it for selfish reasons. So when Noah actually uses apes together strong without even saying it, but actually using the community to get all the Eagles to kill Proximus, that's what the true message is about. That's when apes are truly strong together, when they're trying to defeat a foe. So I gave it a pass. Like the Koba thing.
Yeah, that's a good parallel, for sure. Well, what else have I got here? Another thing I didn't love in this movie was the pacing. I thought the first act in particular
was... Yeah, the third act was slow.
I thought the third act was fine, personally. I had trouble with the first act, mostly. All that bit of them just gathering the eggs up and trying to find their eagles, like
that was
nothing.
The first 5 minutes.
I know, and then they got back to their like nothing really happened until they met May and the village burned down. Once Act Two started, I was fine, but Act One was just. I think it was partially me going into it, thinking of it as number four instead of a soft reboot. Number one, I was hoping we'd hit the ground running, but I had to readjust my expectations because the first act is as slow as a first act of a number one movie. It's not the first act of a number four movie, you know? And that was my problem with it. It's just so comparatively slow for a number four. I just couldn't get into it as much until the second act. I'm like, okay, village is burned. Now he's on his hero's journey. And then it just got better from there. And yeah, maybe the third act was a little long too, but I was more bothered at the beginning than the end. And the whole movie is not a breakneck pace by any means anyway. It's kind of, I call it deliberately paced. It's more, it's moving along the entire time. It's taking its time. It's more about the conversations and the philosophies than the action, which is perfectly acceptable. That's good stuff. I was just more bored than I wanted to be in the first act.
That's fair, I guess. I kind of gave the first act a pass because I knew this was like generations later. I mean, they said it. Yep. So, but so I was like, okay, we're gonna do some world building here, and we're just gonna have to accept it. And I found that to be paced out pretty well. The second act started to drag like the tiniest bit when it was a lot of Noah and Raka scenes, but by the third act when they're exploring the vault, I was like, holy fuck, man! Like, let's get to the. I was like, let's get to the climax, because I can tell we're in the climax, but that's when I felt like. They didn't just take their time for the first and second act. They took their time with the entire length of the movie. Yeah. And it felt like some scenes could have been cut down, especially near the end. But, yeah.
The world building in the first act was slow as I was watching it, but it all paid off in the end. I wouldn't have been as emotionally invested by the end if it wasn't for establishing what Eagle Tribe is and what everything means to him, why the eggs are important, why the eagles are important, a bit of stuff with his family and his friends. It's all important to care about the end, but it was a little hard because I was being impatient. Let's see. I quite like the production designs and costumes. That
yeah, I thought they were all pretty well done.
Yeah, that all the ape settlements are in the remains of human things. The Eagle Tribe settlement is just in, I don't even know what you call them, just like power towers, like yeah. Electrical towers that like they build theirs in the trees there. Raka's tribe was in the ruins of a human city, just in the underbrush through the buildings. Proximus's tribe was in derelict ships on the coast. Yeah. So I liked how all the repurposed human things that the apes make. And for costumes, I love the continuation on from the Caesar trilogy, where in that trilogy the apes were just naked, and then later on they got some war paint and some weapons. But in this one I'm like, oh, I like seeing a little bit of functionality here. You have cloths on your wrist for your eagles to go on to. You have slings and pouches for to hold your eggs. You have a little bit of ceremonial wear. You have the blue cape for the community leaders, the religious leaders. Proximus has a crown to show a status symbol. So we're starting to get into more functional clothing and status, like basic status symbols in this society. Just the costumes showed a very subtle level of world building, which I really appreciated.
Yeah. And I love they didn't go like full into it where they were dressed from head to toe. Throughout like the different clans, I like, because it subtle. Still feels like naturally they're just apes and they're different. But yeah, I totally agreed. It felt as if we were watching like a native tribe in real life. And it was done pretty well. And I love the one that was dressed up the most was Proximus, to kind of just show his status among the other apes. So it was very well done. And I really enjoyed Raka's necklace is the Caesar symbol, which is the window that he for the attic that he grew up in.
Oh, yeah. Just
it's a nice touch.
Definitely. I like how everything is so overgrown
Yeah.
Seeing
that you can't really tell if you're in a city or not.
Even the very first scene when they're going after the eagle eggs, they're jumping on these skyscrapers like they're jungle gyms. Just everything's like you can't even tell they, you can barely tell they used to be buildings that mm-hmm. reach up to the sky, but they're just all overgrown.
Yeah. Funny enough, like the opening scene where they're jumping from those buildings kind of reminded me of like a level in Horizon Forbidden West where she's like jumping. It's like it's set hundreds of years into the future and you are going through like this tutorial mission where you're jumping through buildings that are kind of like that. So it's a nice kind of parallel to that as well. But yeah, it's, I loved how everything is so overgrown that you can't really tell where you are. And just, I've never really seen that in a movie on that scale. Usually it's like, if they said 100 years in the future, it's like, it's like a couple leaves on the end of like the Empire State Building. But here it's like everything is covered and it just seemed natural.
It's covered and out of control. I also think the sound design went a long way to creating this post-apocalyptic world too. I think one of the first shots of the movie is just the eagles flying above all the overgrown world. It's all just natural and peaceful. And even the ape communities are more quiet. You just hear a lot of nature sounds. The world is in a balanced state. The sound design just makes the world seem like it's going smoothly on its own without humankind, and apes are living in harmony with it. They're not clashing with the balance.
Well,
right away. Later. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely later.
Yeah. It's, I thought everything on a technical level was superb, as it always is with Weta Digital.
And I think the
best VFX house out there.
And I think the music was also like that too. I thought the soundtrack was a kind of like the sound design, a peaceful sort of vibe for most of it. And it got melancholy and intense when required. It was something, it was peaceful, but a little sad at the same time. Mm. But it's,
I liked how subtle it was too.
Yeah.
How it didn't really particularly overtook a scene. Just kind of helped drive the emotion of the scene forward, because I didn't really notice the music throughout this movie, but I think it adds to it where it helped push the message and the emotion of the scene, but it didn't overtake it, if that makes sense. Or like, wow, this music's really blaring for no reason whatsoever.
Plays the subtext well.
Not in this one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, subtextual music, if that's a thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's music's basic function is just to play the subtext. Actors are playing the text. Music's playing the subtext. It tells you how to feel. That's all a good score should do. Just did it. Haven't talked about the acting at all yet. I think
it's phenomenal.
It's very, very hard to replace someone of the caliber of Andy Serkis. But I think Owen Teague did a great job as Noah, and I'm excited to see him going forward. He's a worthy successor to Caesar and the lead of this franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He did a great job, and I loved him as a protagonist. I have a theory that Noah is a descendant of Caesar just because they kind of look so similar. And he's got like a bit of a birthmark like Caesar did. But it's hundreds of years later, so I don't even know how they would be able to reveal that in canon. It's like,
for sure,
we humans did a DNA test, and you're a descendant of Caesar. It's like, that would be just too far gone. But yeah, Owen Teague did phenomenal. I liked how his like hero's journey and his reluctance to sort of kind of go out into the world and kind of accept the new things. But as soon as he sees the other ape communities like Proximus' community and how, you know, he's all about the law, right? He's all about the law of the elders. We just should believe everything they say. And then as soon as he sees that is completely wrong, he doesn't like completely go against it, but he's like, things need to change. And yeah. I think Owen Teague did a phenomenal job with showing that transformation through the character, especially even in the end scene with May, and how they're negotiating and how he says, can we truly coexist together? I can fully see that he's a different person than he was from the beginning of the movie. It's just a great performance.
What I think he did very well was his body language specifically.
Yeah.
I mean, his dialogue delivery was all good, but the impressive thing here is his body language. Like, even just early on in the movie when he's talking to his father for the first time, and I don't even remember what the conversation was about, but I can tell just by the way you're looking at him and the way you're slouching and kind of uncomfortable, you really respect this guy, but you also kind of fear him at the same time. And I could tell the entire relationship with his father just based on the way he was standing and looking at him while the father was talking at him.
It was so good.
Just things like that. I don't usually see body language that thorough in a performance, enough that I notice it anyway, but very well done there. I love all, but as for all the actors across the board, I love the way they make their apes move, because they don't feel human. They feel like apes. But although I do think, I think these ones feel a little bit more human in their movements than the Caesar trilogy. Am I wrong in that?
A little bit, but I sort of accepted it because it's just evolution, the generations.
Well, that's not me criticizing it, because in the original Planet of the apes are like, you know, they're in full clothes. They walk basically like humans. Like, I know that's where it's going. So what I'm trying to say there is, I haven't seen the old trilogy in a while, but if I'm right in thinking they're a little more human-like in this one, a few generations later, the way they move, then that's a good development. Just like their costuming is getting more functional too. So just in the body language, in the costuming, in the way they're constructing their societies, we're moving closer to that original Planet of the Apes. Subtly, which is very well done.
Yeah, that's another theory, is that this trilogy is going to tie into the first movie somehow. Because there is something, very subtly, there was like on screen in the Rise of the Planet of the Apes of astronauts going up into space.
I don't think this trilogy. I feel like
if they do that
it.
Complete circle, I think that's a little too far. Like, just stay on your own story.
I'm fine with that personally.
I don't think everything needs to be connected.
I'd actually like to see that, but not in this trilogy. I think, as I said, that original Planet of the apes were a lot further along here, and I don't think we're gonna get to that point in Noah's lifetime.
No, because they were like in full clothes. Like, talking like humans fully.
Walking like humans.
Yeah.
I do think if this trilogy, not this trilogy, if this Apes franchise can keep the level of quality going, I would like to see them get to the point of the original movie. They don't need to remake the movie or anything. You can go just right up to the doorstep of, and the apes find out Charlton Heston's ship crashed. Or you can just remake the whole movie in this timeline. I don't care. You can do that at this point if the quality remains. Because by this point, I think you could theoretically do a good remake now. Because the first time, like, what is the point of a remake if not to show us something different? And all these movies have put us on the side of the apes now. The original movie was entirely from Charlton Heston's point of view. It's this, apes are weird. I'm a human and now I'm on a planet of apes. This is freaky. But if you remake the movie, Charlton Heston can be the odd man out. And that would make it interesting again. So it could be done. And I'd actually like to see that happen if it keeps going this way. But for now, we got Noah and his tribe, and I have no idea what they're going to do next. Clearly, they're setting up the human resistance as some kind of antagonistic force.
I straight up thought, because I didn't think it was satellite links, I thought she was grabbing launch codes. Like, that's what I thought she was grabbing. I don't know why. Maybe because, like, the vaults, Fallout, like, Fallout came out recently, too, so my brain's, like, nukes.
Yeah, true.
So I kind of had a chuckle about that. But yeah, Kevin Durant as Proximus, so fun,
so good.
He's a great villain in this movie, because he's not like, again, I won't even say he's fully evil. I think he's just using apes as a means to get what he wants, but he also wants them to be together.
He's very sketchy, but I can see where he's coming from, which is the mark of a good villain. He's very charismatic too. I just enjoy when he's sitting them down to dinner and he's like, yeah, you should join me. We're just trying to like learn stuff, push ape kind forward.
Mm-hmm.
It's all good.
Even when the vault opens, he's not like pissed at Noah for doing it secretly. He's like, look what you did. He's like super happy about it. This is amazing.
And even when May shoots him, he's like, wow, are there more of these in here?
Yeah.
He's so much fun. He's just excited. Like, oh, cool new weapons. Wow.
Mm. Yeah. It's kind of sad that he got killed off, but also it's kind of the perfect amount for him as well.
Yeah.
Where I feel like if they kind of dragged him out through, if there's going to be a new trilogy, if he was like the main villain for all of it, I feel like it'd be dragged out. But I think they used his time perfectly. So much so I've heard people complain, oh, he wasn't in it enough. It's like, that means he was good. That means he likes it.
You know, this franchise does villains very well. I'm not remembering the main villain of Rise of the Planet of the Apes right now, but we had
James Franco's boss.
Yeah. Like in Dawn, we had Koba, who was great. In War for the Planet of the Apes, Woody Harrelson was great. In this one, Kevin Duran, Proximus, was great. The last three movies have had great antagonists. It's been a consistent strength of the franchise among its many consistent strengths.
Yeah, it's weird because like in Rise, like you could even argue James Franco is the villain somewhat.
He's the only one on Caesar's side.
I guess
he's trying to save his father with Alzheimer's.
Here's the film student in me. Society is the bad guy.
Yeah. Well, in this one, definitely.
Yeah. But yeah. How do you feel about Freya Allen? Her performance?
She's good. She's good. I mean, I wasn't mind-blowing by her or anything, but... She played the mindless human... pretty well, the feral human. She did that well. I like the moral complexities of May when she reveals her intelligence. I don't necessarily root for the character. I have trouble with her morality, but I appreciate the grayness of it. I'm looking forward to seeing how her story progresses and what her relationship with Noah will be like. I anticipate it getting more antagonistic, which will make this initial meeting more interesting in retrospect.
She's
good. And I think she has potential to get even more interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I liked her character and her characterization of May. I also kind of liked how they name her Nova at first, and Raka's like, we name them all Nova. We don't know why, but we do. Because it's like the first girl that was like a pet in war, sort of, and they're all Nova. But yeah, that was pretty, that was funny. Yeah, I liked her performance, especially when she started to show her true colors, when she, you know, killed William H. Macy and shot that ape and then held a gun behind her back when even talking with Noah, because she wants to trust him, but fully can't because they're different species. So it's just an interesting character study into her, and I'm glad she's part of something that's objectively fantastic. I don't know what her future is in The Witcher, probably, but it'll be interesting. Yeah, I'm glad to see her do something else. That's huge. I think she'll probably be a big star later on. She's only 22, and she's already up there, or getting there.
Yeah, I think she's got a good career ahead of her, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what. I don't know if I have much else to say about this movie. I was sitting through the credits and
What a Wonderful Day.
No, I'm not. I was sitting through the credits and I'm just reading names, and like halfway down the list, I noticed D. Bradley Baker was in there under like Specialty 8 voices, and it was just weird for me because I'm like, I never recognize anyone's names this far down on a blockbuster movie with hundreds of names. The name just flew out the screen at me. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
I know
he's
that one.
Usually one of the few voice actors they go to for like animal sounds. I'm pretty sure. Like one of the big ones he did Appa and Momo and Avatar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Say, did I say Appa? I meant Appa. Excuse me.
Fake fan. God damn you, fake Steven. Fan.
God damn you, Steven. He started calling Appa during
to
that
piss
whole
you off?
Fortnite craze. Oh. No, he's just an idiot. Sorry, Steven.
Poor guy. Okay. Well, you got a question of the week for me at the end here?
I do. It's kind of a funny one. It's not really a serious one, but it's kind of funny.
Sure.
Do you think this film will finally get the respect it deserves by winning the visual effects Oscar? Or do we have to wait once again for the next one? Because I'm up to here with my patience, this film not winning best visual effects or film franchise.
It's not going to win. And I'll tell you. And let me tell you why. As a critic and a film fan and somebody who really appreciates this, I am on record within this last hour in saying that I was not as impressed with these special effects because I'm too used to them. It's too consistent. They were great 10 years ago. They're still great. It's not exceptional enough for award material to me anymore. The time to do it would have been during like Dawn of the Planet of the Apes or Rise. Now it's just consistent and it's good. It's not groundbreaking enough
or war.
But even then, I feel like that was too late. It's not groundbreaking enough anymore in my eyes to merit an award for now, because it's old technology. They just refined and they made it look incrementally better. Like, yes, at the end of the year, and you'll ask me what movies of the year had the best effects, it's probably still going to be a top five. Who am I kidding? But it's not going to be the one where
I would like to remind you that the Oscars like to do legacy awards. So,
well, yeah, okay. Maybe.
Sometimes.
But I know it's going to be high up on my list for best special effects of the year. But come the end of the year, I might say, wow, you know what? That was a great movie, but this movie was doing some really groundbreaking stuff. And I think it needs to be recognized as like, this is special for this year. If we're awarding movies from 2024, this is the movie that broke the most new ground this year. And that's what I like. The Legacy Award would be nice, but I feel like its time has passed. It should have gotten recognition 10 years ago and it didn't. And it's a travesty, but I think the world's moved on. It's still good. It's still competitive, but like it should be nominated. But just the way awards work, the way cultural discourse works, I feel like time's over for it.
I haven't moved on.
Encounter. Yep.
Yeah. I remember the big shocker was when War didn't win, because that's when they started to look like super realistic.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since they were shooting like on set. It's just insane how much the composition and the lighting matched. And then they gave the award to Blade Runner 2049, which, you know, Denis Villeneuve movie. I could see it happening. It'll probably lose again to Dune 2, because I feel like Dune 2 is going to get a bunch of technical nominations. So it'll probably lose to that.
As it
I just want them to win once.
It should get nominated, yeah.
Yeah. See, Dune is an example, right? Because I was, like, super wowed by Dune this year. I watched Dune 2, and I'm like, this is crazy. How are they doing this stuff? Like, when I'm thinking of what should win a Best Visual Effects Award, that one in my gut's more like, wow, this is spectacular. Apes, yeah, I've seen that before. It's been good this year. It's been good for 10 years. You know, it's like, it's just, you take it for granted. It's unfortunate. But it didn't stand out, is my point. It didn't do anything to make me be like, this one deserves it more than something else, right? It's just a yeah.
Whatever. Hater.
That's my take on it. And you're going fair. For the Yeah.
I just think it's funny that it hasn't won, like, once. Like, with all the leaps and bounds it made, not even just with the visual effects, but just performance capture as a whole. Like, how much these movies have pushed the level of quality of performance capturing is insanity to me, and how it's not really been awarded.
These movies are always on my pedestal for how to handle CGI in movies, which is something I complain about often, but never with these movies. The Apes have always been like, I'm like, why do big budget superhero movies and stuff look so fake when the Apes franchise is a thing? Why do movies still look bad when these movies are a thing? And that's what made me realize that Hollywood's just lazy and doesn't give their artists enough time to do good work. And I'm like, yes, this is the movie that should convince CGI haters that CGI is good in the right hands.
Yeah.
It's not just blanket bad. It's bad when it's unfinished.
I also think Andy Serkis probably should have been nominated for Caesar at least once.
Well, that's too. Once it goes back to what we said at the
very... He'll get, what do they call it?
Honorary.
It's not a legacy award. Yeah, honorary Oscar. Like, Jackie Chan got one a couple years ago. Mm. And I think Samuel Jackson got one recently. It's like like a celebration of their entire filmography and their time dedicated to Hollywood. So he'll probably get that one. Because I haven't really... There's no real bad news about Andy Serkis that I can recall. So he'll probably get one.
It goes back to what we were saying at the very top of this episode. The Apes franchise is weird because it should have been lauded so many times over in the mainstream for what it's done, but it's always just flown under the radar. Everyone who sees it knows it's great, but it's never rewarded for being...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember when I know we got to end it soon, but when we went to Comic-Con just to see Andy Serkis and during his panel, he said Apes Together Strong and how many people freaked out?
That was a good panel.
I remember
we were on the wrong side of the entrance and we saw him walking in with the,
walked right by us.
Were those cosplayers dressed up as Snoke's guards, or was that?
I don't know.
Whatever was going on there was funny. They walked him in dressed as Snoke's guards.
I think it's really funny. It's funnier in my mind if they just saw those two cosplayers and they were like, hey, can you walk in with Andy Serkis? I think that's funnier, but it probably was like a pre-planned thing.
Yeah.
Just in my head canon, I think it's funny, just two random guys walking around as Imperial guards. And it's like, oh, Andy Serkis is here.
But they were specifically Snoke's guards. It wasn't just like Palpatine's guards. Like, it was a different, Like, they came here. They knew what they were doing.
Mm-hmm. Nice man. We took a picture of him.
There's is that video still on your YouTube channel? Were you?
It's still up there. Yeah.
Yeah. Watch that. Ryan Walker YouTube channel. Find the Comic-Con vlog.
It's the one of four videos that I have.
Yeah.
I posted on there. Anyway. Yeah.
Well, I was supposed to be John Wick. He was Joel with a Grogu in his backpack. It was a great crossover cosplay.
Grogu was my Ellie.
Yeah.
Because like the Last of Us show had just come out around, or was a, yeah, it just come out around
that. It was around that.
And yeah. And we only ran into one other like Joel and Ellie cosplayers, which I found shocking.
And you got a picture with them.
I did. Yeah. Andy Serkis complimented my Grogu. He was like, ah, that's funny. It's like, yes, I made a fucking A-lister laugh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Meeting him was fun. Even though it was for like 5 seconds. It's that's what's great about like Comic-Con and Fan Expo. When you get to meet these people that you've grown up with, even if it's for a short amount of time, it's like, holy fuck. Like, that was Anakin Skywalker that I just, you know, shook hands with. Like, that's fucking crazy.
And, I know.
Even though we waited 2 hours to see him, Fan Expo. I blame Fan Expo, not Hayden Christensen, because he's a popular guy. yeah. We also went on a Saturday.
I know. We're going on a Sunday this year. We're being smarter.
Yeah.
The only reason we went Saturday was...
The floor. I said catch us around the floor if you can see us.
Sunday, Toronto Fan Expo. Close-up's not going there officially, but we'll be there.
No, we don't have a panel. It'd be really funny if we did.
You'll see us as...
Yet.
The goal is we're going as 3 clone troopers. If you see Commander Rex, that'll probably be Ryan.
Captain.
And if you see Captain...
He doesn't want being a commander.
If you see the captain, then that's Ryan. I'm hopefully going to go as Hunter from the Bad Batch. If you see... So if you look at a Hunter and a Rex, and then Justin will probably be Crosshair. That's our goal. I said it online now, so it should happen. Or else we're...
Yeah, we said it online, so now we have to do it. We have to fully commit. All right. Well, you can find me at Ryan Walker Official on YouTube, TikTok, and on Instagram.
And you can find me on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook at ThoughtPlane Media. Also, check out the Close Up with Ryan and Joe Facebook page for latest updates on the show. If you listen to us in audio, check out our YouTube channel. And if you're on YouTube, find us anywhere you get your favorite podcasts. We hope to see you on the next Close Up with Ryan and Joe. Till next time.